All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, week two of the preseason edition, first show back for the 2024 football season edition. I am Bobby Fenton here on JoeBucksFan.com. Little bit of a hiatus, took some time off, you know, doing a podcast once a week that lasts from 30 to 45 minutes can add up, folks, but I cannot resist, as neither can you if you're listening. The siren song of football season, and August is that month, and here we are, folks, and I couldn't be more excited to be back with you, couldn't be more excited for football season, couldn't be more excited for the 2024 edition of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So thanks for joining us. I haven't done a show since I believe it was the post-draft? Something like that. It was back, it was the schedule release, the draft, all the stuff going on in the offseason before the summer starts. I can't even remember the last show. Doesn't matter now. Because here we are, we've got a roster in progress. Final cuts haven't been made, of course. We've got a schedule. A draft class is in here. Everything's set to go. Free agency, it's all happened. And now there are pads clicking. We've already had one preseason game on Saturday night as the Bucs were able to get a win over the Bengals and get some guys some work there. Bucs are in Jacksonville. I'm recording this on Wednesday afternoon right now. So as we speak, they're in Jacksonville doing that joint practice thing that teams are doing more of nowadays. They'll be doing that today and tomorrow. Then Friday, they'll have their own walkthroughs on their own. Then Saturday night, the game in Jacksonville, preseason game number 2 of 3. Bucs don't play a preseason game at Raymond James until, of course, the final of the three, which is a week from Friday. But we'll, yeah, I'm not even worried about any of that. We'll talk a little bit about the Bucs-Bengals because there were a few individual performances that we'll get to and things like that. But, you know, first show back today, more overall big picture stuff as we get set to embark on what I hope is a 2024 season that ends in the Super Bowl just like every other season. But no matter what it ends up being, football season, I say this all the time, and I'm not going to get too schmaltzy or overly sentimental, but football season, more than any of the other sports, and if you listen to my show, if you've ever heard my radio shows back in the day on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, you know I'm a lover of sports. I love them. I love baseball. I love hockey. Golf, horse racing, whatever it is. I'm a big sports guy, huge sports fan. Played a bunch. I still play. I play amateur baseball and rec league, adult hockey, all that stuff. I've played semi-pro football in addition to all my high school stuff. But of all of the sports, football's the only one that is a state of mind, I think. Like, football season comes and goes, and it feels different, and I'm in a better mood. And I often, I've said this before on the show many times, I often question what I'm doing with my life, because when football season comes around, I markedly notice an improvement in my mood. Like, I'm in a better mood, I'm happier, I've got more bounce in my step. And throughout the spring and the summer, there are other things. And, you know, I've got a wife and two kids. My son's big into youth sports. My daughter's big into, you know, dance and aerial and gymnastics and all that. And we got stuff going on, but it just doesn't, it's not, you know, like, it's not the same as the fall. Like, when August hits, let alone September, October, all the way through the holidays and into the playoffs and the college football championship at the beginning of the new year, all that stuff, it's just, I'm in a better mood. And I always ask myself, I'm like, do I need to get a life? Like, why am I in such a better mood because of football? So what? Basically, I ask myself, why do I need football season to feel this good? Why can't I feel this good the whole year? And I don't mean I don't feel good the rest of the year, but there's just a little extra level. And football's the only sport like that. I love baseball. Love it. But I don't sit around in December going, oh man, just 3 months until spring training. No, I don't even think about baseball. When baseball season comes around, first of all, the season's so long, there's 8,000 games. But it's not, it's like, oh, already? We got spring training already? But with football, and I think that's part of what makes football great, is the scarcity. I mean, the game itself is my favorite sport, but if you played 162 football games a year, it wouldn't be the same, right? Like the scarcity, the setup where it's you play once a week, and every game carries an extra amount of import because there aren't as many of them, and any one result back and forth could change an entire season. That's especially true in college football, but it's true in the NFL too. And you know, all the things. And I grew up, my uncle and my dad were both high school football coaches. My uncle was a high school football coach for 40-some-odd years. And I was always, I mean, every time, this time of year, every week, I was the ball boy from when I was like 7 years old. I was on a high school football sideline every Friday night. Then I became a player. Then I actually coached with my uncle after I got out of college a little bit. And it's just a family thing for me, and it always has been. It's you know, one of those things where when we get to this time of year, it feels so, so good. Like, once we get into the regular season and there's the prime, there's Thursday night football, Monday night football, Sunday night football, that type of thing. Like, on a typical Thursday night, for example, it'll be 2 p.m. on a Thursday in October, just a random Thursday in October. And I will feel like, hey, I've got something going on tonight. And all I'll really have going on tonight will be like Jags at Titans on Thursday night football. But it's like, oh, yeah, no, there's something going on tonight. Like, I feel like I have a life, even though it's nothing to do with me. I'm just going to watch some random football game that probably isn't even that important. But you compare that to a random Thursday night in March or April or July, and it's like, there's really, truly nothing going on. No, we got an NFL game tonight. There's only 272 of them in the regular season. That's not that many. And only 17 of them with your favorite team with the option for more. And we'll talk about that on today's show as we give some initial thoughts on the outlook of the 2024 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But if you've listened to my show before, thank you. If you're back, thank you for sticking through the hiatus. If you've never heard my show before, I'm sure there's a lot of new viewers to JoeBucksFan.com. The single best place, I always say, anywhere, TV, radio, print, electronic, you want all-encompassing Buck coverage, you're going to get it from the Joes. And not just during the season, but 365 days a year. And multiple times a day, like you hit the refresh button at 5 p.m. after looking at the website at 11 a.m. and there's two, three new articles up there. And the Joes are tireless workers. They are dedicated guys, not just to the Bucs, but to the NFL itself and its coverage, and especially to the Bucs. And I wish I'd kept count. I don't even remember when my first year doing this show on Joe Bucs Fan was, but I think this is like, I remember Jameis Winston, I remember all that. I mean, so this is at least like the ninth season I've done this on JoeBucksFan.com. And what it does for me as someone who used to do sports talk radio is it gives me a piece of it. It keeps me around it. You know, I don't do sports talk radio anymore full time. I do this show from my house with a microphone hooked up to my laptop, and it's great. I love being able to do that. But it just keeps me feeling like I'm still a member of the media, even though I never really considered myself a journalist, even when I did sports talk radio. I was part of the scene, and it keeps me feeling part of the scene. So if nothing else, you know, it gives me a microphone, I can say stuff, and the Joes are kind enough to put it up there, or at least have been so far. Maybe that'll eventually run out one day. But especially with the popularity of the website, it's a great boon for me to be able to not just record this on my own, but have the Joes put it up there on Joe Bucks Fan every week. And so we'll try and get back to the schedule. Usually try to come out with the show on Thursdays, but it could be any day. I mean, whatever the Joes say. And honestly, sometimes I'm late, sometimes I'm early, whatever it is. But I'm doing this on Wednesday because the Bucs have a Saturday game this week. And like I said, the games right now, the preseason games, this happens every year, by the way. You get excited for preseason football because you haven't had anything else. Even the Hall of Fame game a couple of weeks ago. I remember we were on vacation that week. My son was playing in a baseball tournament in Pigeon Forge because this is his 12U year, so he's playing in these baseball tournaments all over the place. It's fun. But we were in Pigeon Forge, and it snuck up on me. It was a Thursday, and I was like, oh, my God, this is the Hall of Fame. Like, there's football on TV tonight. I got so pumped up, like football on TV. And then we're in the Airbnb that night, put the game on. Yes, like it's actual football, not even training camp, like with practice jerseys, like real uniforms. There's lines painted on the field. There's a score graphic on the screen. Like, this is a football game. There's a clock up there, referees, the whole thing. Painted end zones. And what happens in the preseason? You watch, like, three series maybe, and you're like, okay, this is kind of boring. Like, I'm not, you know, I was really excited for this. And, okay, now I'm ready for the real season. And same thing with the Bucks. Like, Bucks-Bengals Saturday night, I was all fired up. Watched the first few series, then after that, it was the Olympics was going on too, so we were going back and forth, although that wasn't live. But it's better than nothing. Let me put it this way. People complain about preseason games, and I don't believe there should be four like there used to be. I think three is more than enough, and I think two is probably all you need. especially now, like I said, with more joint practices and things like that that they're doing, like teams are able to use those things as ways to get guys looks in live action. I think we'll look back, just like we look back, I remember the 70s and 80s, they played 6 preseason games, right? That's like a third of a season. That's insane. Like, we look back on that, like, that's crazy. Then they cut it to 4, and we all got used to that. That's how it was my whole life growing up in the 80s and 90s and 2000s too. And then they cut it to 3 recently, and now even 3 seems like too many. Like, yet, though, what am I saying? I know they want to add another another regular season game probably and make it 18 with 2 preseason games, but either way, it's better than nothing. Like, would you rather just not have had a game this past week? And of course not. I mean, you don't have to watch it, but it's there. Now, we all want the regular season to start as soon as possible, of course, but I don't want them to play 20 games either. I mean, selfishly, that'd be great, but I don't think that's what's best for football. I thought 16 was just right, honestly. But anyway, I'll take a couple preseason games as opposed to not having anything. And so we've got that this Saturday with the Bucks and the Jags. And in the meantime, where are we at right now? Well, let's talk about the outlook for the 2024 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I say this every year. I grew up, I was born in 1980. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. The Buccaneers teams I fell in love with, the only football I knew professionally, was double-digit losing seasons. And playoffs weren't even a consideration. It wasn't even like, hey, I wonder if they'll make the playoffs. And when I was a kid, I didn't care. I remember my dad, my mom, and my family would go to games. We didn't go to every game, though. It was like a special occasion. Like, we'd go to like 1 or 2 a year I'd get taken to. Maybe 3. And I grew up like in the shadow practically of the Sombrero. I lived over there in West Tampa until I was 12. And even when I moved, though, like, going to a Bucs game was a big deal. You know, we weren't season ticket holders that went every single game. And that was all I cared about. I'd get so excited. It didn't matter. And all I cared about was the Bucs winning that game that day. I didn't even, like, I don't think I even looked at the standings that much. I just loved the Bucs, and I loved the experience. So that's a very formative thing. And so having grown up that way, even now as we sit here, the Bucs have made the playoffs 4 years in a row. They've won the division 3 years in a row, something they've never done before. And same thing has happened with the Lightning and to a lesser extent the Rays, where success has become more commonplace and the playoffs become like a baseline. Like, of course we're going to the playoffs. Then what happens is what I care about. I try to always remember, never forget what it was like, and I want to cherish every little bit of it. So I'm just happy anytime we go into a season and we got a chance to do something. And this 2024 Bucs team certainly has that, if nothing else. For multiple reasons. One, they're not bad. Two, and let's be honest, they're the beneficiaries of what has been the worst division in football. This is a team that was 9-8 last year, got a home playoff game out of the deal in no small part because of the very, very weak NFC South, and they did something with it. Beat the Eagles. Got to the divisional round. Played pretty well in that. I mean, it, you know, came up a little short against the Lions, but that wasn't exactly like they were overmatched. And they were a couple plays away from the NFC Championship game that they probably would have been favored in, by the way. Well, no, they wouldn't have been favored in it. But anyway, the point is, like, this was a team that both felt like they weren't that great last year and also came close to doing something really special. They did do something special. Just winning a playoff game is a special thing if you look back over history. I mean, you know, you get to the final 8 teams of 32, you've done something. And yet, it never felt like they were that good, right? Like, I never felt that way, and I don't feel that way now. But I feel like they're good enough to at least play meaningful games in December, especially given their division. So let's look at the team. I mean, what has happened since the end of last season, okay? Obviously, there have been a few changes, not a ton. The most glaring change in the coaching staff, obviously, is Dave Canales is now the head coach in Carolina, and Liam Cohen is the new offensive coordinator, a guy who had some history with Baker Mayfield, was his offensive coordinator when he had sort of a mini revival with the Rams a couple of years ago. And so we've got that change, which remains to be seen, you know, how much of an effect that will have on things. As far as the roster, though, goes, Baker Mayfield is back. He's got himself his deal, and, you know, we've said this many times on the show, Baker Mayfield is not in that upper echelon of quarterbacks in the league. And there's only, I mean, you count on one hand, maybe two, how many guys where any team in the league would want them. Like, there's only, how many teams in the league would not trade their quarterback for another quarterback? Obviously, I mean, even the number three quarterback in the league team would trade for Patrick Mahomes. But how many teams are like, nope, we're good. Like, this is our guy. We're good. Like, we're totally good. A few. But Baker Mayfield, to me, is in that next tier. I mean, he's a better than average. He's not a guy who gives you a chance to win a Super Bowl by his mere presence, but he's a guy you can win with. That's how I always put it. So that's the same. Running back. Like what I saw from Bucky Irving the other night, right? I don't read too much into preseason games. I look more at individual performances than anything. And you know, you can't even those you can't read too much into because you don't know the quality of the opponent they're facing, or if it's their fourth string guys. Even the first string guys for the Bengals, for whatever success the Bengals have had, they do have one of the worst run defenses in the league, or at least have had. That's their number one guys, never mind their backups. But Bucky Irving looked like a, and I'm not, Rashad White can help too. I always say running backs, you know, you can get them anywhere. You don't need to break the bank for them. You don't need to sweat losing one. So they get Bucky Irving in the fourth round, and he looks like he could be a nice compliment to Rashad White. So that was a good thing. So they added him. Okay, that's not a downgrade, at least. At wide receiver, first of all, just the people that we already have had, can they be better? I think Chris Godwin, you know, I think he's still been getting back to his old self little by little since that injury a couple seasons ago. And I don't think he was all the way there right just because he came back. But I think this season we could get a better version of Chris Godwin. Everybody's raving about Jalen McMillan, the draft pick from Washington. I'm always leery of when there's a hot camp guy. Oh, Jay, this guy, you know, and he's that guy. Doesn't mean he won't be good, but we'll see. Everybody's talking about how great he's been. Obviously, you hope Mike Evans continues to be what he has been. And I don't think we're at the point in his career yet where we'll see a downgrade in his performance. So, wide receiver, I think maybe slight improvement. Offensive line, this is the big one. Bucks have had issues. They've had issues, and their offensive line wasn't terrible, but they've had issues, and they had the worst running game in the league for 2 years in a row. Ever since Ollie Marpet retired, I feel like that really threw him for a loop, and it took time to rebuild. Still taking time to rebuild from that. That was a tough one. And ever since then, you know, obviously Ryan Jensen getting hurt, eventually retiring on top of what. But even with that, Marpet, that since then, it's they had it all right where it needed to be, and then they won the Super Bowl, obviously. But they've been trying to kind of scrape it back together since then. Graham Barton, the draft pick, okay? He played 18 snaps on Saturday night in Cincinnati. This is only 18 snaps, and it's only preseason, and I don't want to get carried away. But no pressures in 18 snaps. PFF, whatever you think about PFF, gave him an 80.1 pass block grade, an 87.3 run block grade. Both of those things are good, okay? He did well. In fact, he was the highest graded lineman of any of the 2024 draft class linemen that played this past weekend. So that was a good thing. And by the way, he hadn't played center since freshman year at Duke. That was his first live action at center in a game since freshman year at Duke. So that's going to, and Hainsey's in the mix too, obviously. Aaron Stinney and Matt Filer, both below average, are gone. Ben Breederson has been picked up. He's going to play, or at least looks to play, left guard. Cody Mauch at right guard, supposedly beefed up in the offseason. I know everybody always says that every time about guys in camp. Oh, he's bigger, he's been in the gym, blah, blah, blah. But Cody Mauch, you know, he had to get a little bigger in there, and supposedly that's what he's done. And obviously you have Worfs and Gedeki on the bookends. So interior offensive line play, I think, cautiously optimistic, could be an upgrade to go along with Rashad White back there and the new addition, Bucky Irving. So offensively, and Liam Cohen's the wild card, you know, how much of an impact, positive or negative, will switching from Canales to him have. But offensively, I don't think the team's like way better, but they're definitely not worse. They're a little bit better, it seems like, on paper. Now you get to the defense, and this is where I am concerned more about the 2024 Bucks. I wish we had another pass rusher. We'll see what Chris Braswell, the second-round draft pick, ends up being. It's too early to tell. No real change in the interior D-line with Logan Hall and Kalijah Kancey and Vita Vea up there. On the edges, though, Shaq Barrett is no longer here. He wasn't bad. I mean, he'd reached pretty the end of his tank, I think, and he's retired now. But he wasn't bad last year. He still got a handful of sacks. Still was pretty good in run defense on the edge, too. We'll see what Braswell ends up being. Yaya Diaby's been dinged up, should be fine, though he's not doing anything in preseason. He'll be there. But Yaya Diaby, 7 sacks, a great surprise for a lower-round draft pick. But if he's all you have, it's not enough. And so the Bucs' ability to get to the quarterback, and I always, you know this if you've heard me ever, the number one thing on any defense to me in the NFL, and every time I think back to the Bucs' successes over the years, going all the way back to the Tampa 2 days in the 90s and the early 2000s. Oh, and by the way, rest in peace, Monty Kiffin. I didn't get a chance to, when that happened a few weeks ago, but I played football at Jesuit with his son, Chris, his younger son, Lane's younger brother. And Monty came in there a few times and gave us some pregame speeches and stuff like that. And just a great guy to be around, and a Tampa legend, an NFL legend in the Ring of Honor. My thoughts go out to his whole family. But ever since then is what I'm telling you. When I think of good, successful, happy Bucs times, Buck domination, did they ever not have think about both the Super Bowls. They were just getting out. Think of the game against Patrick Mahomes. Think of Simeon Rice and Warren Sapp. Think of Santana Dotson going even further. pass rush. Very rarely, oh man, we're awesome, we're dominant. Pass rush is just okay, but whatever, we're still dominant. No, it starts with a pass rush. If you get to the quarterback, and the Bucs secondary, we'll talk about in a minute, but, you know, secondaries can be good and bad on their own, but they're a lot better or worse depending on their pass rush. And so that's a bit of a concern. I want to see more than just Yaya Diaby. I hope Yaya Diaby takes a big step forward. At linebacker, you know, the whole Devin White soap opera is over now. He's in Philadelphia. Lavonte David keeps performing at a high level. I mean, even right up to his most recent game, most recent performance last season, he is. Eventually that will stop. He is getting a little older. Hasn't given us any reason to believe it's happening yet. Just knowledge that it will happen is, a concern. But having Devin White out of the mix, you know, I feel, here's my thing with Devin White. I'll say one last thing. He's not on the Bucs anymore. Still a really young guy. I think he needs to mature some. I know what he said about being in a better situation. Everybody laughed at him and said, oh, the Bucs beat the Eagles, you know, in the playoffs just 10 minutes ago. What are you talking about? Better. He means better situation for himself, I think. And as young as, what is he now? I think he's only 24 right now. I'll give him this. If there was ever a change of scenery candidate, it's him. You know, he's got the physical athletic ability. He's very young. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery. And I don't dislike Devin White. I'll always be grateful for that Super Bowl season. He did great and was a big-time performer in that run and stuff like that. Obviously, I don't think his loss hurts the Bucs X's and O's wise. They were benching him toward the end of the season. But the overall point I'm making here is just looking at additions and subtractions from last year's team, and at linebacker, not much change there. So at cornerback, Bucs lost Carlton Davis. Zion McCollum, in addition to Jamel Dean, who was already starting there, and Zion McCollum started kind of like as a third cornerback anyway, because either Dean or Davis had injury issues at different times. So he's not getting thrown into the fire like he's never played before. He is a big, big chip here, big variable and what he's able to do. And he, the number that jumps out, no interceptions the past 2 seasons. He wasn't a full-time guy, but still. And interceptions aren't like a stat that are the end-all, be-all for cover guys, but still none. Nevertheless, though, in 2022, he only had 1 forced incompletion. That went up to 10 forced incompletions last year in 2023. So that's cause for a little bit of optimism. But how he can do, if he can anchor down that other corner spot, that's going to go a long way. Like what we did at safety, because we all love Jordan Whitehead. We were all upset when he lost. We got him back. That's cool. And the draft pick in round 3, Tykee Smith, is a guy a lot of people are high on. We'll see. I never want to get too excited about draft picks. You don't know what they can do, even if you're excited. But I like the Tykee Smith pick. Like I said with Graham Barton, same thing. Those are guys you hope can contribute. But at corner, I think the Bucs maybe are obviously without Carlton Davis, although Davis wasn't as good as he had been before, I think the Bucs could call themselves a push at corner compared to 2023, the 2024 edition. But yeah, lost Ryan Neal at safety. Jordan Whitehead's back. That's a slight improvement. We'll see what Tykee Smith can do. So I don't think this Bucs defense overall, a Bucs team overall, really, is worse than last year. Maybe a little bit better. We'll see. The division, maybe is a little tougher now. Carolina probably is still bad, but probably also not as bad as they've been. The Saints, eh. And everybody likes Atlanta now that they got Kirk Cousins. They upgraded. It's not going to be Desmond Ridder back there anymore. And that's fair. I mean, the Bucs did beat Kirk Cousins in week one last year in Minnesota before he got hurt. But he's an upgrade over Desmond Ridder, and the Falcons will be better off for having him, even though they drafted a quarterback and pissed him off almost immediately upon signing him as a free agent. But either way, it's one of those divisions where it gives you more hope than maybe you would probably have with this roster in another division. I'll put it that way. But I'll say this about the Bucs. They're hard to put a finger on because, like last year, I remember saying on this very same show, like this preseason, you know, this time of year last year, I remember saying the Bucs were a real high variable team. I thought their floor and their ceiling were far apart. Like they had a high floor, low ceiling. Because you could have told me last season before the year, the Bucs are going to go 5-12, and I would have been like, okay, I actually, that's believable. And you could have said they were going to go 11-6, and I would have believed that too. Like they had a very wide range of possible records. This year's team, I feel the same way. Like, I don't feel like their ceiling is, like, anything crazy. Like, I don't, if you told me they were going to go 12-5, I wouldn't believe that. And I probably wouldn't believe 11-6 either. But if you told me anything from 10-7 all the way down to, like, 5-12 or 6-11, all those seem believable to me. Like, none of those seem out of the realm of possibility. And we know in the NFL, it's always like that. I mean, there's always going to be a lot of close games. There's always going to be games that hinge on one play, one bounce, one call, one whatever, and how you do in those games. You know, this is, again, why I love football. One red zone opportunity in week four where you kicked a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown could change the outcome of a game, could change the outcome of a division race, could change the outcome of a season. Tiebreaker, there's just not that many games. And so every little thing matters more. It's great. It's really fun to watch. Americans will tell you. But it also, I mean, in baseball, it's all going to shake out, right? 162 games. And in football, you can have years where your turnover margin's +8, and that same team that would have been 7-10 goes 10-7. There's a lot of randomness and a lot of luck factors into it. Now, if you asked me, what do I think the Bucs' ceiling as far as a final season result is? I think they're totally capable of winning the division. There's nobody in the division that's that far ahead of anybody else where it'd be a shock. I don't think the Bucs maybe have as big of an edge on their rivals in the division as they have, but I think that they still. I haven't even looked at the futures odds and stuff. I think the Falcons are probably favored, right? But not by much. And that's the thing, though. I don't feel great about a wild card coming out of the NFC South. So, yeah. Anyway, that's where we're at on all those things. We'll know more as the season goes on, as depth charts start to be cemented. Roster cuts will happen in a couple of weeks after the final preseason game, all that stuff. But big picture, I'm excited. There is reason to be excited. These games matter. It's going to be close, so these games really matter. And at the end of the day, this is entertainment, and that's all you can really ask. I say it all the time. There's 365 days in a year, man. We get to watch our favorite football team play on 17 of them, not counting preseason, and hopefully a couple playoff games too. But every one of them is a gift, man. And it's so exciting. There's only 20 from right now. On Wednesday, I'm doing this. 22 days until Ravens at Chiefs to open the entire NFL season. That's on Thursday night in 3 weeks. Then 25 days till Commanders come to town to take on the Bucs in week one. If you want to get fired, I don't know if this show will even be posted by tonight, so this may not be it may be time sensitive. But if you hear this before Wednesday evening at 6 p.m., it's Creamsicle Day. They're having like a thing at Armature Works. You can go down there and have some fun. And they're doing, I mean, look at this, the email here they sent. Creamsicle Day is going to involve, it runs from 6 to 9 p.m., fireworks show, exclusive gear, vintage Bucks merch market, free roller skating. I think they mean like the 4x4, like not the inline skates, like they're really going retro. Free event, free mini pennant, for all who attend. So head down to Armature Works later on. I don't like the word creamsicle. You know that. It's just orange. I know that we never called it creamsicle when the Bucks actually had those uniforms. They are doing it again this year against the Falcons. It'll be great. We'll talk about it more then. But they're doing a little event tonight as the team is in Jacksonville getting ready for the preseason game. Also, hey, look, season tickets are sold out, or season passes as they call them now. That's another thing I miss, by the way. I used to be a season ticket holder. I attended, I think it was 110 Bucks games in a row from December of 96 through 2008. I did not miss a single Bucks home game. Not a single one. And that counts preseason. And that counts when I was in college, okay? When I actually came home whenever the Bucks had a game. Every game from the University of Florida and my 1 year at FSU in Tallahassee. And one of the best days of the year back then, because I still miss the printed tickets on paper. Remember the little booklet you'd get? One of the best days of the year was getting home, and there'd be a little FedEx envelope just leaned up against your door, and you knew, like, that's the tickets. And you'd open it, and the smell of that ink, and the, you know, this 1 year they had the leather bound, like with the little football leather, like pebbled leather on there. I still have all the stubs. Nobody gets stubs anymore. You go to a game now, and there's nothing, you know, no record of it. I miss my ticket stubs. But that was awesome back when they had that. I remember that day. Every year was a great day opening those season tickets. Those are sold out this year. There'll still be individual game tickets and all that. But it bodes well. It bodes well. And, you know, the first game's going to be one of those. Actually, I think that one's a late kickoff. Let me see here because, oh, that's another thing. The fridge schedule. This is where I need my fridge schedule. I'm doing the fridge schedules this year. For those of you that know, you already know. But for those of you that don't, I type up the schedule. I use color team logos for all the opponents. I make a whole nice thing. And you can put the schedule up on your fridge. If you email me, I will send it to you. So if you, my email is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. 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 Email me for it. I'm still working on it, but I'll have it done probably later this week. And then I'll send you the file back, and you can print it out. Color print recommended. Let those logos really pop, really shine. Get them up there on your fridge. That was always another way I knew it was football season. My grandmother, she would always put the schedules on the fridge, and she always did whatever high school my uncle and my dad were coaching at, then Florida State, because she was a Florida State grad, and the Bucks. Those three schedules would always be up on her fridge. Then she'd write the score every week, and she'd put X's. She never did W and L. She did X's for wins and O's for losses, and she'd write the score. Tradition. Core memory stuff for me, and I do the same thing now on my fridge. I'll send it to you if you want it, the fridge schedule. So let me know if you want one, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. But that week one game is a 4:25 kickoff to spare the people. Although in the beginning of September, 4:25 is the same as the middle of the day, and it doesn't get dark till afterward anyway. But it may be a little better than a 1 o'clock kickoff. Looking at the Bucks schedule this year, 1, 2, I think they've only got, okay, the Falcons game is another one, 4, they got more than usual. Sunday 1 o'clock kickoffs can be a little bit tough, but they've only got 2 of them when it's really hot. The rest of them are later in the year. I was impressed with the number of primetime games the Bucks got too, where I wasn't thinking they'd get as many as they did. But the Washington game to start things out, that's when things get real, and we've got 25 days until that. So let me know if you want a fridge schedule, and we can get it over to you. Other impressions around the league as we start the new year. It's only been 1 week of data. But the new kickoff rule, that's the biggest change, I think, as far as actual football goes league-wide. And we'll see how much of an impact it really has. It's only been one game in preseason at that where teams aren't doing that much crazy stuff yet, and they're probably just playing it pretty straight. But I got to tell you, I'm a big, big kickoff guy. Like, I'm one of those people that really, really hated the touchbacks, really hated how the kickoff was taken out of the game. Maybe it's because of my football history as mostly a backup wide receiver at Jesuit High School, but I always was a special teams guy. Like, special teams is where I was able to make my mark, so I guess that's why I kind of became a special teams guy. But let me tell you something right now. Football games need to have some sort of a kickoff. Like, some people were just saying, hey, why don't we just get rid of the kickoff? Just start at the 25. Whenever that team wants to onside kick, remember they were saying do that 4th and 15 thing and just do it. No, no, no. A football game, a football half, a new possession, besides turnovers or punts, begins with a damn kick. You kick the ball. The guy, remember everybody standing there going, ho, and then the guy, and watching 10 guys just fly down the field as fast as they could. That's football, man. And so I understand why that maybe can't be a part of the game anymore because of the injuries, and they're trying their best to like balance reducing the number of injuries with actual football. So I think this is a good compromise. It's not the same. I don't like that the guys are facing each other 5 yards away. I like to see the guys running down the field. But other than that, it kind of looks like a normal kickoff, and you have to have an open mind with this stuff. If you want to see the game of football endure and you want to see the game of football thrive, and you know, I get the whole injury concern. I get that the guys in charge of this stuff have a tough job, and it's easy for me to sit there and say, ah, keep the kickoff the way it was. But it was getting really, really, really shitty, let's be honest. I mean, it was 82% touchbacks last year. In week one, there were 82% returns. So it wasn't 82% touchbacks last year, but it was a very high number. 82% returns this year. And the average starting field position was the 28.5-yard line. That compares with like the 25.5, which was mostly just due to all the touchbacks, because the 25 is where it goes. And you know, those of you that have watched know there's a few different rules. I won't explain everything here, but the basic tenet of it is, instead of having the kickoff team way down the field, because you get that 40-yard head start for injury, you know, all that speed, that's where all the injuries happen, those full field collisions. Now they're only 5 yards from each other, and they can't move until the ball touches either the ground or the return guy, and then boom. Then after that, it's people blocking, people pursuing, lanes, all the things you're used to on kickoffs. So it's a pretty good compromise. We'll see how it goes. And maybe some guys start breaking a few. And, I prefer the regular kickoff, both as a player and as a viewer. But this might be a nice compromise, and it was something we saw in the preseason. It's definitely better than touchbacks. What's the most boring play in all sports? Probably the foul ball in baseball, icing in hockey, and touchback in football. You know, you want as few of those things as possible. They're boring as hell. So fewer touchbacks will be a good thing, and if nothing else, the new rule will accomplish that. Like I said, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. If you want a fridge schedule, if you want to make a comment, anything you want me to read on the show, I'll do it. It is great to be back. I want to say one more time, thank you to the Joes for giving me this platform. It's an honor and a pleasure to get in front of you every single week. We are back, and we'll be back next week. Bucks Jags, Saturday at 7:30. Yes, I know it's preseason. Yes, I know you're not going to plan your whole weekend around it, but it'll be there for you, and the real stuff is coming. August is a weird month because nothing actually happens much in August, but it's a feel-good month because of what's just over around the bend, okay? And we're almost there. And in the meantime, keep it at joebucksfan.com for any news. Anything that breaks, you'll have it there first. In the meantime, I'm Bobby Fenton. That is your week two of the preseason edition of the Free Stretch. I'll be back next week. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks!